Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good afternoon this fine Thursday afternoon. This is Sam Rohr, and today I'll be with David Kistler, the normal voice you hear coming on to first of the program. Gary Dahl will not be with us today. He'll be back tomorrow, but he actually is in the General Assembly here in Pennsylvania, and was invited to open the session in prayer. And so I think when Gary comes back tomorrow, he probably will have some good comments, or comments anyways, from the experience there today, and so forth. But anyways, we welcome you wherever you're listening to the Stand in the Gap Today program. We know that there are folks who listen on the other side of the world by internet. So if that's where you are, we welcome you there. If you're in Texas, Oklahoma, or New Mexico, or here in Pennsylvania, or the other states where we're heard on physical stations, we welcome you and are glad that you're a part of us today. We're going to have a good program, as always. Dave and I are going to have a number of things we want to go over. And then David New, who's with us generally every other Thursday, Washington attorney, really. And we're going to talk about some legal things, I think, that'll be of applicable, of interest here. And we get into the second and third segment. So anyway, Dave, we try to hit the news of the day. And we try to take the things that most of the news is talking about first and give commentary about. And I would say we'd all have to agree that it probably swirls around the Pope's comments in the address to Congress that went on this morning. So I'm going to go to you first and say, since you listened to it, as I did, what are your overview thoughts about what the Pope did, what he said, and perhaps even how he said it?
Well, Sam, you know, let me just talk from a stylistic standpoint, and then we'll get more into the substance of what he had to say. From a stylistic standpoint, Sam, it was at times bordered on sheer brilliance. You know, he walks into the chamber there, just being in that chamber for any reason whatsoever. And I've been in the chamber several times, of course, in the Senate chamber as well, where I was privileged to lead in prayer a number of years back. Just being in the chamber itself is an august experience. It is a solemn experience. It almost overwhelms you because you understand what all has taken place in the House and Senate chamber down through the history of our country. So just going in there in and of itself is a phenomenal, phenomenal experience. But to see him walk down front, step up behind the podium, and then begin his address with a reference to the land of the free and the home of the brave, at which John Boehner began to cry, as he typically does, you know, honestly,
you're right,
is an experience that is hard to get past. Then It was sheer brilliance, Sam, for him to pick four Americans: Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Dorothy Day, and then Thomas Melton, to pick those four Americans and use them as basically the divisions of his message that he delivered to Congress was sheer brilliance. Because how do you develop any animosity, or how can you be offended when a gentleman is coming and he's taking four of your Americans and using them as his springboard to talk about four specific components, which is basically what his speech was about? So from a stylistic standpoint, it was absolutely brilliant.
And Dave, I'm listening to it earnestly as you were. I had to actually go back and pull the transcript and go through it because there were some things I just didn't either understand or I couldn't pick up. But I was anticipating. I don't know if you were, but I think many in Congress were also anticipating that the Pope would was actually going to kind of bear down on some of the more controversial statements that he has said earlier relative to distribution of wealth, which we interpret redistribution, taking Americans' money and spreading it around the world, and some things relative to that, environmental policy. But it didn't come across to me as being highly offensive, yet at the same time, all of that subject matter was included, wasn't it?
It was indeed, Sam, and as one gentleman said who was a commentator after the speech, and now we're moving from stylistic things to substance, and the substance, of course, is a whole different story. I am not commending the substance of his speech really at all. There are some things, yes, we would agree with. But, Sam, one gentleman said it this way. The only person that would have been offended by the content of the speech would have been ISIS or a terrorist. And there is some truth to that because it was so masterfully worded. Humbly delivered, I will say, that it would be hard for anyone to be offended by what he had to say. Now, let's go to one part, and it goes to the redistribution component, which in other places where the Pope has spoken, he really did bear down on this. In this particular speech before Congress, he did not. But let me quote just two sentences and then make a comment. He said this: the fight against poverty and hunger must be fought constantly and on many fronts, especially in its causes. I want you to think about that. In its causes. That is what causes poverty and hunger. I know that many Americans today, as in the past, are working to deal with this problem. It goes without saying that part of this great effort, part of dealing with the problem of poverty, is the creation and distribution of wealth. Now, notice, Sam, he did not use redistribution, but that's what he's talking about. He's using a word that's not going to offend anybody. It's not going to create a political divide in front of the people before whom he's speaking. But that's exactly what he's talking about. He is a strong anti-capitalist, strong redistributionist, and that's what he's referring to. But masterfully, cunningly, masterfully worded.
Dave, I agree with you totally, and I think what you said was well stated on that. It's going to take a little bit of time to really wade through all of really what's being delivered in these 4 or 5 days here in the United States, I believe, by the Pope. But it's very clear everybody's hanging on every word. And as one journalist mentioned a little bit earlier this morning, that said, you really can't understand the full narrative until you take all of the speeches and link them together. Because in fact, Dave, I don't know whether it stood out to you or not here in the speech, but when he got to the section on the environment, which was a very strong statement, they talked about it yesterday. The president talked about it. That was the one thing that when the Pope got up yesterday at the White House after the president, the first thing he complimented him on, it was in his second paragraph. He said, "I compliment you highly for talking about the environment." So this whole thing of nature and the environment is a big, big deal. But see, he had done an encyclical on it some time ago, and in this speech, he actually referred several times to that encyclical. So you really can't understand fully, I don't believe, what he said here in this speech or will likely say at the United Nations until you pull out that encyclical and other comments and kind of link them together. That makes for it makes it a little bit of a puzzle almost, doesn't it, Dave?
Well, it does, Sam, and it's the same way legislation is written. You being veteran of being in the legislature there in Pennsylvania understand that when a piece of legislation is written, especially if it's on the national level coming out of the U.S. Congress, it refers back to certain things legally, certain other things that have been said in other places, and does not include the full context in the legislation itself, but refers back to it in other places, so you have to go and locate that to understand what's being said. That's exactly the way he is speaking on this trip. He's referring back, as you said, Sam, to these encyclicals, and to get the full impact and import of what he's saying, you have to go and read those to appreciate what's going on.
Now, thank you very much, Dave. Yeah, we're going to come back and look just a little bit more at some of the content. We'll bring in David New on this and some other issues. But I think that when we look at the high points of what's being said, we get a good flavor of what's taking place here. So you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr and David Kessler. Our guest David New will be with us. We'll come right back in the second segment here right after we hear these announcements.
As Christian financial advisors, we hold a biblical worldview and teach stewardship as a lifestyle. For over 30 years, we have taught families how to apply God's Word to our daily lives. Our 3-day stewardship lifestyle seminars are held in Bible-teaching churches across America. We go far beyond basic budgeting and dig into the meat of Scripture. We believe that principle without application often lead to frustration. This is Roy Russell with the Life Financial Group in Douglasville. We are just west of Pottstown on Route 422. Visit our website or read our weekly blog at thelifegroup.org. There you'll find videos and PowerPoints for our ministry to the local church.
In addition to investing and actively managing over $100 million, we prepare hundreds of tax returns for believers around the area. Come in for a second opinion and see how a biblical worldview can positively affect your investing and financial planning. Call us at 610-385-4500. That's 385-4500, or on the web at thelifegroup.org.
Securities offered through Genius Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
The power to tax is the power to destroy, wrote John Marshall, the fourth Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who was born this day, September 24th, 1755. No one had a greater impact on constitutional law in America, as he served on the bench 34 years and helped write over 1,000 decisions. He fought in the Revolution under Washington and during the winter at Valley Forge. The nation felt a profound loss at his death. The Liberty Bell cracked while tolling at his funeral. Chief Justice John Marshall wrote, "It would be strange indeed if, with such a people, our institutions did not presuppose Christianity and did not often refer to it."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
Can you help me with this new Common Core assignment? I'm supposed to read all about global warming and how we're polluting the air just by breathing. I held my breath 10 times today because I don't want to hurt those poor polar bears.
Oh, honey, don't you worry. There are 4 times as many polar bears now than when I was a kid. You can breathe safely because you're not polluting anything. That's just another government scheme cooked up to tax and control people.
But it's right here in my Common Core book, Grandma. I'll get a bad grade if I say that. What shall I do?
Get Common Core out of your state. If you would make this your one and only project, you could change the country. But we can only make this change if we're willing to stand together. Learn more about federal Common Core and Pennsylvania Core standards and call your representatives today. Ask them to stop the national takeover of education. Go to PARestoringEducation.org or call Richard at 484-678-2236. This message brought to you by Pennsylvanians Restoring Education.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back. This is Sam Rohr with David Kistler and our guest now, David New. Those of you who listen to this program regular recognize him as well. So, David, I'd like to recognize you and welcome you to the program here today. Thanks for calling in from Washington.
Thank you so much. It's a blessing to be with you.
And it's a blessing to be with you as well. You being an attorney and all, I'm sure you have a very specific probably thoughts about the presentation of the Pope this morning and Dave's reference earlier to me being in the legislature and knowing how things develop over time and so forth, I think hit a real good point. Was there anything that stood out to you from a legal kind of perspective, just an overall aspect of how you interpreted what was presented before these lawmakers in Washington?
Well, it was a fascinating speech. I think David Kistler hit it right on the head. It really was an incredibly effective speech. One thing in your opening segment that I wanted to comment about, the issue of distribution was one topic that he also covered, and the issue of climate control. One thing I would like to point out is to think of those two things as the same thing. They are not different issues. They are the same.
What are you saying? Say it again. You're saying what he said about environmentalism and what?
When the Pope is talking about redistribution of wealth,
mm-hmm.
and when the Pope also comes out in favor of President Obama's views concerning climate change, and that we have a problem with the climate, that we're affecting it negatively and so forth, and all this type of thing, we've got to do something about it. Those are not separate issues. They are the same thing. They are not different. When you talk about wealth distribution and when you're talking about climate control, in many, many ways, they are identical.
I think that's a great point, Sam. I think that's a great point David's making. There is tremendous overlap. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, David, because I want you to go ahead. But that is an outstanding point you're making.
I agree with that.
About it. This is one of the reasons why this Pope has come out with something that is so strange in a way for him to do. What does the Pope have to do with science and climate, the science of the climate and all that, climate Scientology, meteorology and all this? It isn't about the science. It's about wealth distribution. It's about government regulation. It's about the government redistributing things so that we don't impact the environment negatively, allegedly. And they are the same thing.
And Dave, I'm going to. And I'm going to come in after you and comment on what Dave just said as well. And I think you're making an excellent point here because, and do you not see also a very clear connection between, as you're saying, the concept of distribution of wealth, poor, I mean, rich to poor and so forth, and the environment, all the discussion going on that, and is it not significant that it's within the broader context of social justice and meeting the needs of the poor and poverty? Because right immediately after this congressional address, the Pope went over to the church and he was bearing down on the concept of lack of housing and said it was immoral not to have enough housing for the poor. And I didn't catch all of it, but he went directly there. Do you not see all three of those all connected as a part of an overall policy?
Absolutely. They are describing the same thing different ways. They're coming at the same, they have the same goal using different tracks, the science community and the climate situation, the socialists with the wealth distribution, the liberals with the social justice issue. They're all going in the same direction. It basically means more government, lots of government, and I'm sad to say, and the Pope is correct in that we should take care of the poor. We should help the poor, but it's better than giving them the, you know, there's a saying about giving a person a fishing rod. Would you rather give him a fishing rod or the fish? You'd rather give him the fishing rod so that he can make his own way and sustain himself through his own efforts. Wherever this wealth distribution business has gone, the only result is everybody gets poorer.
Go ahead, Dave.
Sam, I want to jump in here just a second because I want to read something to you guys, and I would love to have your comments and David's comments on it just here in this segment before we move on. The Pope said this, and I'm quoting, "We know that no religion is immune from forms of individual delusion or ideological extremism. That means we must be especially attentive to every," listen to the wording, "every form of fundamentalism, whether religious or of any other kind. A delicate balance is required to combat violence, perpetrated in the name of religion, an ideology, or an economic system, while also safeguarding religious freedom, intellectual freedom, and individual freedom. Now, here's where it gets a little tenuous, okay? But there is another temptation which we must especially guard against, the simplistic reductionism which sees only good or evil, or if you will, the righteous and sinners. The contemporary world, with its open wounds, which affects so many of our brothers and sisters, demands that we confront every form, listen to this now, he's equating this with being a sin, every form of polarization which would divide it into these two camps. In other words, describing things in terms of good and evil, righteousness versus sinners is not something that we want to do. Sam, David, love to have your comments on that.
Well, Dave, David Kistler, I saw that as well. And to me, that jumps out to me and says, wait a minute. What is the basis of determining the definition of these things? How are you going to determine who's too fundamental or who's too not inclusive enough? Because the Pope's address was all about unity.
Correct.
And subsidiarity and solidarity and you as Americans all moving forward together. And he's talking in terms of the world. To me, there is somebody is defining something new and different, but the terms were not defined, David. And that's part of the thing I think that concerns me. David New, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is first, John, if you want to read a book about polarization,
that's a great point.
First John.
That's a
that
great
book,
point.
There's only two ways to go in that book. You either with them or against them. I mean, his attitude in this particular area is most unusual because the Bible is very, very polarizing. You're either for God or you're not. You're either with him or you're against him. You're either a saint or you're a sinner. You're either walking in the light or you're walking in the darkness. And I do not understand his attitude here.
But I do a little bit, and I believe that this is what we're going to see more develop even in the before the United Nations. Earlier this year, the Pope was in Europe, and he was making a speech, and he was addressed by a non-Catholic newspaper editor, Mr. Scalfari, and he asked the Pope this question about whether or not atheists could get to heaven, and the Pope wrote back, and he said this. He answered this quote: "You ask me if the God of the Christians forgives those who don't believe and who don't seek the faith. I start by saying, and this is the fundamental thing he's saying, that God's mercy has no limits if you go to him with a sincere and contrite heart. The issue for those who do not believe in God, get this, now is to obey their conscience." He goes on, still speaking, "Sin, even for those who have no faith, exists when people disobey their conscience." End quote. Gentlemen, when you look at the definition of that, I guess everybody in the whole world can be on board there. But if you don't hold to that as a Christian, you may be a troublemaker.
Well, Sam, it sounds like this. Rather than letting your conscience be your guide, it sounds like the Pope saying, let your conscience be your God, because that's what he's saying.
Yeah. That's right.
It's unbelievable here that, you know, to say basically, and again, Sam, in the context of what you just read, which was a statement made by the Pope in response to a question earlier this year, you set what he said today in that context. Then what he is saying is this: there is really, in one sense, no good and evil. There is no righteous person in the center. You know, everybody, I guess, a form of universalism, everybody's going to make it eventually as long as they're sincere and they follow their conscience. Well, Sam, that is as contrary to the scripture as it could possibly be.
Well, David, that's correct. And in that context, though, if in fact we apply this filter and this view to this address before Congress, as you say, if you reject the concept of right and wrong and say no, and you say sin is only violating your conscience, well, then, as you said earlier, who would have a problem with this address?
Well, you know, the other thing I want to say is this, and then we can move on. But it, to me, it is absolutely unbelievable that in the context of what we have been watching happen with ISIS and the way they have horrifically murdered Christians around the Middle East, for the Pope not to be able to find it within himself to use the term not just broadly fundamentalism, but Islamic fundamentalism or Islamic extremism. To not be able to say that to me, gentlemen, is absolutely stunning.
I think I agree, Dave, and I think that just as much as what was said is interesting, it's what was not said that was also interesting, which is what you're saying. Well, folks, you are listening to Staying in the Gap Today. This is Sam Rohr and David Kistler. Our guest, David New, is with us. Stay with us. We're going to come back on the other side of this news break, and we're going to look at actually a lawsuit that's now been filed opposing some of the things that New York City is doing in regard to the Pope coming there shortly thereafter this afternoon. Stay with us, and we'll be right back after these news breaks.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom, shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom, shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
A Fox News alert. I'm Chris Foster. Immigration and climate change, two of the topics touched on by Pope Francis in his address to a joint meeting of Congress today on people trying to get into the United States to make a better life.
We must not be taken aback by the numbers, but rather view them as persons.
He urged members of Congress to protect the environment and every human life. Without specifically talking about same-sex marriage, he also said, the family today is threatened, perhaps as never before, from within and without. That was before lunch at a church in Washington. He also stepped onto a Capitol balcony to greet tens of thousands of people there waiting, saying in Spanish, translated here,
y les pido, por favor, a ustedes,
and I ask you all, please,
que recen por mí,
to pray for me.
This is a Fox News alert.
The first U-Turn conference sponsored by the American Pastors Network was a life-changing experience for pastors and Christian leaders throughout Pennsylvania and beyond. Now we have the opportunity to take this conference across America. A matching gift offer for $30,000 will be doubled to $60,000 in order to bring U-Turn events to many more states in 2016. All gifts made through September 30 will be doubled. Visit AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and go to the Donate button to make your immediate gift to equip pastors and all believers to stand in the gap for truth.
In 1778, George Washington said in Valley Forge, if having pleased the almighty ruler of the universe to defend the cause of the United States, and finally to raise up a powerful friend among the princes of the earth, to establish our liberty and dependence upon a lasting foundation, it becomes us to set apart a day of gratefully acknowledging the divine goodness and celebrating the important event which we owe to his divine interposition.
Hi, friends. Janet Parshall here, host of In the Market with Janet Parshall. I'm excited about partnering with 1180 AM WFYL to bring you a fast-paced conversation every Sunday. As you listen to In the Market, we'll examine major news stories and issues, equipping you to be bold when voicing truth in a confused and chaotic culture. I look forward to engaging my new friends at 1180 AM WFYL every Sunday at 12:05 p.m. on In the Market.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back. This is Sam Rohr and David Kistler, and our guest today, David New. Thanks for staying with us through that break, and we want to get right back into some of the real news of the day. We're going to move on from the speech that the Pope made before Congress. There are a lot of things that will be coming out of that that we didn't touch on, substantive issues that were included there, including immigration and his call for the abolition of the death penalty, as an example, and a number of other things that were included within that address. But he's now going to be leaving this afternoon and going up to New York City. And some things are happening up there. And David New, I want to ask you to come on and lay out really kind of a maybe not an unpredictable lawsuit that's been filed there, but tell us what's taking place there that folks are kind of pushing back against either what the city's doing in relationship to the Pope or something. But lay that out there for us, please.
Well, there's a group called the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and I think this group means every word in the title of their organization. They are very much interested in being free from religion, period. And they have sent a letter to the city of New York, to the mayor. They sent it on September 8th. They complained to the city about, and here's the first sentence, I'm writing on behalf of the Freedom From Religion Foundation to object to New York City's ticket giveaway contest for Pope Francis' Central Park procession. And because the Pope is going to be riding around in the Pope Mobile in Central Park and they're giving out tickets for people to attend this event, they think, and this is what they said in their letter, quote unquote, by singling out this event for a ticket giveaway, New York City appears to be endorsing Pope Francis' sectarian religious message. Now, this is crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Well, you know, David, these guys, they jump up and they surface at the most unusual times. I guess this is a great time to get some publicity for the organization. Do you think that's they're as concerned about the Pope, or they're more concerned about getting some publicity?
Well, they are in Madison, Wisconsin. The only thing I can think of is that they have drank too much sour milk or cheese up there. There's something wrong with these people. This is not even normal. You know, this is what happens so often with these people that are so, they have never, ever understood the separation of church and state. They do, the ACLU doesn't understand it. The People for the American Way do not understand it. Americans United for Separation of Church and State do not understand it. They do not understand the American teaching of the separation of church and state. They never have. I mean, when you get the president of the Constitutional Convention in his farewell address after serving 8 years as president, that's George Washington, and he says religion and morality are the foundation for our society, for our political structure. And they're saying the exact opposite. These people are unbelievable.
Well, Dave, you know, that, I mean, what you're talking about, I mean, we hit it a number of times on this program, but I wanted this to come up again because it continues to surface. It still scares people when they think about it. But not just to the general public not aware of what this real principle is about. Dave Kistler, there are many really in the pulpit who are sitting in the pews of America who don't understand that principle, right?
Well, Sam, that's 100% correct. In fact, just this week I had an encounter with a gentleman. He's a great guy. He's a wonderful guy. He's a dear friend, but he made a statement that reveals exactly what you just said. We have been so inundated with incorrect information coming from groups like Freedom From Religion, the other organizations that David New referenced. We have heard so much that has come from them that literally I think a lot of Christians are scared. They run scared, and anytime there is something that borders on this stepping over from one realm, the religious realm, into the governmental realm, or vice versa, they fear that we are somehow violating this misinterpretation of the First Amendment. And so what's needed from the pulpits of America, Sam and Brother David, I am convinced, is not just exposition of the scripture, which of course is vitally, vitally important, but there needs to be periodically a statement coming from the pulpits of America, the pastors taking the time to explain the history of our great country, and especially how the First Amendment came about, and more definitely, what the First Amendment was trying to accomplish. If we're ignorant of that, gentlemen, we're in deep trouble.
Dave, I want to come back to you first, David Kistler, and I want to ask you, give the biblical underpinning right now of why, of what the relationship ought to be biblically, morally, between the jurisdiction of church and state. And then, David New, I want to come back to you and say, from a legal perspective, clarify this for our listeners here. Dave Kistler.
Well, thank you, Sam. If you go back to how the First Amendment came into existence, of course, the phrase separation of church and state is not in the First Amendment. It was in a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to the Danbury Baptists, who were deeply concerned that the new Constitution being written would not provide for religious liberty. They did not want what they had just come from in England. And so the wall of separation that Jefferson referred to was not to keep God out of government. It was to keep government from intruding into the realm that only God should have. So it was not to isolate or divorce God from government, but to make sure that government didn't intrude and try to set up one denomination of the Christian faith as the only one that could be could be in the United States of America. So from a biblical perspective, if you look through the Old Testament, look through the New Testament, primarily the Old Testament, God always had something to say about government. Our founders wanted the same thing. They just did not want government dictating to the church what they could or should do.
Because, Dave, as you're saying, every law has a moral underpinning.
It's rooted.
If you take God out of it, what kind of a law will you have? You have a godless law, which is tyranny.
Well, it's what David knew. I think you said it, David, several weeks ago when you were on and you quoted the New York congressman who said, if a law violates God's law, it's really not law. And so that was the understanding that, yes, the moral underpinnings are the Word of God and God's law. You cannot divorce those and separate those.
Okay, David New, from a legal perspective, again, constitutional perspective, to explain that. And then also, before you even say that, This group asked for an immediate court order to stop New York City from doing that. Has that been acted upon? Hopefully they have just rejected that.
Actually, they haven't gone to court yet, and I don't think I think they would if they could, but they just don't have enough time to do it because the thing is going to happen tomorrow. Basically, the fundamental mistake that these groups all make is that they equate the acknowledgement of God with the establishment of religion. They are not the same thing. The Constitution prohibits an establishment of religion. It does not prohibit the acknowledgement of God by the government. Those are very, very different things. The president of the Constitutional Convention that wrote the Constitution in 1787, when he left office in his farewell address, which you can download for free on the internet, is called Washington's Farewell Address. In that statement, he makes it very, very clear where religion fits into government. He said, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. And ladies and gentlemen, during the Civil War, the Congress in 1862 on February 22nd, on George Washington's birthday, read Washington's farewell address. Subsequent to that, starting in 1893, from then on to this year, to this day, the Senate and the House read George Washington's farewell address. It is an annual event that they read the entire document, and so every year the Congress hears about how important religion is. And for those of you who are looking for a biblical basis for the separation of church and state, a passage that very frequently is cited by people is Luke 20, verse 25. Render therefore unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's.
Dave, you made that very clear. And I'm going to come back and ask a very pointed question here. In context of this, we were just talking about the address before Congress and the comment that was made, or the statement that was made there, really about, you know, holding too fast to right or wrong. directly in that context, but holding to a rigid position, really, of morality, as Pope was kind of going down that road. Is it possible, Dave, to have a law system of predictable laws if you don't have a defined moral absolute basis as you approach the whole aspect of truth and law? I mean, what do you end up with if you throw that out?
You end up with bestiality. You end up with murder. When you take God out of the picture, you've taken the source of life out of the picture. You've taken the source of light out of the picture. And when you do that, you begin to murder. And that's what happens when any culture rejects God. And you can see it in the Soviet Union. You can see it in Nazi Germany and in many other places.
Thank you, Dave. I think, you know, that's exactly what you have. If you don't have the fixed moral law that God puts down, it will simply come down to whoever's strongest and most powerful at that point in time, and that's tyranny. So, folks, I think it's pretty clear as we've heard that. Dave, if you can't stay with us through the break. And you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr and David Kistler. Our guest today is David New. And we will be right back right after these few announcements from your local radio station.
This is Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, and I'm thrilled to announce that BJU Press, the Christian homeschool curriculum leader, has come alongside APN as a national sponsor of Stand in the Gap today. Together, we share a commitment to further a true biblical worldview and to follow Jesus' command to be salt and light to the culture. BJU Press provides academically sound educational materials designed to fully equip children for college and the workplace. As postmodern culture seeks to eliminate God from the classroom, BJU Press integrates biblical truth into curricula that's accurate, dependable, and exceeds all national academic standards. APN welcomes BJU Press as a national partner and sponsor of Stand in the Gap today. If you're a parent and want to find out more, visit BJU Press online at bjupresshomeschool.com or by calling 800-845-5731. Again, we at APM welcomes BJU Press as a national partner as together we work to instill Christian values in the generations to follow.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
Jesus taught his disciples in Luke 21 that when the end draws near, certain unmistakable things would happen. Wars, rumors of wars, nations rising against nation, government persecution of God's people, earthquakes, famines, signs in the skies. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. God's clock of time is quickly advancing, and what he warned his disciples about then is upon us today. Jesus knew these things would be alarming, so he said, "Don't be terrified. Don't worry about being dragged into court. Don't worry about what you'll say. Don't worry that you might lose your life." He promised, "I'll protect your eternal soul. No hair on your head will perish. I'll give you the words to say." Then Christ said, "When other men's hearts fail them for fear, look up, because the Son of Man will come in great power and glory." I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network saying, Christian, kneel down in obedience, stand up into the gap for truth, and look up, for his coming is soon.
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
Jeff Bush here from Informed Family Financial Services, located right here in Norristown. Are you nearing the decision about Social Security? Are you aware of the unique claiming strategies available to you when it comes to your Social Security benefits? Don't make a snap decision. Give me a call today at 610-630-4495 to schedule your no-obligation consultation. That's 610-630-4495. Representative of USA Financial Securities, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
If you're looking for a healthy treat today, why not head down to TCBY Frozen Yogurt? It's located in the King of Prussia Mall, the Plaza section opposite L.L. Bean. They have shakes and smoothies and hot fudge sundaes and, yes, even mint chocolate chunk frozen yogurt. And if you tell them you're a listener of WFYL, receive a 10% discount. So today, why not? Head on down to TCBY Frozen Yogurt located in the King of Prussia Mall.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Sam Rohr and David Kistler and our guest, David New. You know, I was just thinking, going into this break, how difficult it is sometimes to have two Davids on this program at the same time. I thought, you know, David 1, David 2, David Kistler, and David New. How about that?
You're a poet and don't even know it, Sam.
I don't even know how. I thought perhaps that would keep us straight here for our listeners. So David New, all right? David 2, David New. I'd like to go to you a little bit. We've talked on the program here, Gary and Dave and I have, on a couple of occasions, because it's all throughout the press. We'd like to get your opinion on it as our legal authority here. But Ben Carson has gotten himself in trouble by saying that he did not believe that a Muslim, however you want to say it, was really best suited, or however it was actually stated, to be in the presidency. Some of the other presidential candidates have weighed in. Ted Cruz weighed in and said, "Well, he's a very strong constitutionalist, but it prohibits any kind of a test of religion." And so he kind of sidestepped it a little bit. Others have been all over the place. I want to come back to you and say to you, is it a problem? And from your perspective, legally or constitutionally, is it fine? Or is it a problem to have a Muslim, for instance, as a president?
Well, the Constitution in Article 6 says, point blank, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. That suggests an awful lot of people can become president, just about anybody, regardless of religion. I think what the gentleman, Mr. Carson, was saying was radical Islamic Muslims. And I think that's what he, if he had been wise, I think he should have put that. I'll answer this question because people are asking, do you think a Muslim can be president? I'll answer the question this way. Take Mitt Romney. He is a Mormon. I voted for Mitt Romney. Let's take that individual with what he believes. He believes in the Constitution. He believes in American exceptionalism. He believes in limited government. He believes in the freedom of religion. In addition to the freedom of religion, he believes in the importance of religion to the culture. Now take him, Mitt Romney, as a Mormon and change one fact. Supposing he is a Muslim. His name is Mitt Hussein Romney. And he's running against Barack Obama, who made that fifth vote possible, on the U.S. Supreme Court to legalize sodomy in the United States. Who do you think I'm going to vote for? I think you can tell. If it's a Mitt Romney who happens to be a Muslim and holds all those things I just said, everything he is, and he just, instead of a Mormon, is a Muslim, I will vote for Mitt Romney as many times as I can. I don't want Barack Obama as president. If he had not gotten reelected, that fifth vote on the Supreme Court to legalize sodomy would not have occurred.
So, Dave, I'm going to ask you more directly. Then are you saying if a person is an avowed Muslim, you are saying that constitutionally he is permitted and therefore we as citizens should not consider that as an issue? Or are you saying...
No, wait. Now, okay. Now you said something else different.
Okay.
Constitutionally, he is permitted. A constitution,
okay.
There's no question a Muslim can run for president and be elected president. Now, a Christian in the voting booth, walking in, that individual can use any criteria, not only a Christian but non-Christians. They can use any criteria they want as to who they vote for president.
That is correct. Okay.
Yeah, they could use the basis of religion. All I'm saying is, if you give me Mitt Romney, Hussein Mitt Romney, mm-hmm. and you give me Barack Obama, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to vote for Mitt Romney, Hussein Mitt Romney.
Yeah, all right.
Dave
Kessler.
Dave Kessler,
I want to go to you.
Yeah, Sam, thank you. Let me tighten the screws down just a little bit. Dave, we love you, my friend. We're not trying to put you in a box here, but
no,
I think...
Right.
I think what Ben Carson ultimately got to, what he was trying to say, is something akin maybe to where you were, what you said there. The conversation moved to Sharia law. Let me ask it this way. If there is a Muslim out there that is obviously committed to Sharia law, then that obviously is a problem for him being president of the United States, because the loyalty is not to the U.S. Constitution. The loyalty for that individual would be Sharia law, and the two are completely incompatible. So we do have a problem there.
So, David New, do you agree with that?
Yes, but remember, the Constitution doesn't put that bar up.
I know.
The voter has that right to put that bar up, and David Kessler just gave what the bar is. If the Muslim says Sharia law supersedes the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution permits that voter to walk in that voting booth and reject that person as president.
So, David, let me ask this. In your mind, understanding as you have read the writings of the founders, in their mind, it would be inconceivable, absolutely inconceivable, that there would ever be a person, a Muslim that was an adherent to Sharia law, that they could ever be elected president of the United States. It would be, in their mind, inconceivable. That's why it was not.
I'll go further and say this. Not only would it be inconceivable for somebody. If you're talking about the founding fathers, they expected Christians to elect Christians. I mean, there's just no question about that. Not all of them, obviously, not all of them, but a hefty percentage of the founding fathers. When you vote, they expect you to. So they it wouldn't have mattered about Sharia law if you're a Muslim. Period. They would never have voted for you.
So I want to come back. I want to come back right here with a question, then say, how do we then know, as an informed citizen, how do we then know if someone is bold enough to say, I am a Muslim, and like some in Congress, I'm going to take my oath on a Quran rather than a Bible? How do we then know whether or not they are subscribed to Sharia, which would then make them disqualified or not? How do we determine that, Dave Kessler?
Well, Sam, I think what you need to do is you need to understand, if they're a practicing Muslim and they are adhering to the five pillars of Islam, a significant component of that is this concept of Sharia. Sharia is the glue that holds the religious and the legal side of this thing together. Sharia law is the legal component. And, Sam, we would need to look into the backgrounds of these people very, 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 I can't emphasize that enough, very carefully
David
to see
Kessler.
What they believe.
David Kessler and David New, doesn't this bring us right back now to where the pulpits ought to be in America? From the standpoint of this, our founders said people of integrity and character should occupy office if we're to maintain a republic, and they had to have a fear of God and to subjugate themselves to the Ten Commandments. An atheist or an agnostic or anybody else could be as much harm as a Mormon, but that's why or a Muslim. That's why we got to back to these fundamentals. Right, David Kessler?
If you adhere to Sharia law, it means you reject the separation of church and state. That's what that means.
There we go, folks.
All
right. You've heard it right here on Stand on the Gap today. This was a good discussion. All the reason why we have to know what the Constitution says, we have to know the truth of God's Word, and the pulpits of America must preach it and promote it. That's what we try to do on Staying on the Gap today. Folks, thanks for being with us today. Stay with us. We'll be back tomorrow Gary Dahl and David Kissel will be back on Staying in the Gap today.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.
Have you checked out our podcasts on our WFYL homepage? Did you know you could stream us anytime, night or day, 24/7 at 1180WFYL.com? If you like what you hear on WFYL, please email us at info@1180WFYL.com to let us know.